KU's got the steal, and the Jayhawks are going to have the win. You can rock. Chuck it up. The Jayhawks win. A Texas-sized beatdown by Kansas.
No Kevin McCullough, no problem for KU. More magic in the fog at Allen Fieldhouse over the weekend. KU rolls Texas and keeps their slim hopes of winning a Big 12 title or a share of a Big 12 title alive. And they'll be at home tomorrow night against BYU, a team that K-State beat. More on that game coming up in the Sports Ticket. Brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. But first, we hand it off to Dusty. State wrestling. We have some area medals, including a state champion.
Yes, five area wrestlers brought home medals from the 3-2-1A state wrestling tournament in Solano over the weekend. For the second straight season, Brogan Monty from Beloit bringing home the state title. He won by fall over Keaton Rottinghouse of Nemaha Central in the final match at 113 pounds, finishing his year at 36-3, and he's now 77-3 for his career after a 41-0 finish in a 106-pound state title as a freshman. So Brogan Monty doing what many people expected him to do here this weekend. You just got to go out and take the match and do it. And so he's a two-time state champion now for the Beloit Trojans and has a couple more years left here to build on that career. Hopefully he can stay on that trajectory for the Beloit Trojans. Carson Montgomery of Smith Center also made it to the championship final before falling 7-2 to Corbin Puga from Norton. Montgomery finishing second at 285 pounds. And also Eli Franklin, a third place finish at 215 for Smith Center. Luke Franklin was fourth at 190. And Brody Boudreau, Beloit, brought home a fifth place medal at 215 pounds. So those are your five state medalists. If you want to go back and look at all the area state participants, you can check out all how they all finished at ncksports.com. And there's results for the entire tournaments for 4A boys, 4-1A girls, and 3-2-1A boys. All there at the website, ncksports.com, for state wrestling this weekend.
Our niece got sixth again, just like last year as a freshman. She won her first two, and then she lost a heartbreaker to where if she would have won, she would have wrestled for third. She lost 5-4, and then I don't think she wanted to be in the sixth place, fifth place match. And she lost that one, so she took home six. But she medaled back-to-back years, a freshman, then a sophomore, so the future's still bright for her. But I know she was disappointed in that. And congratulations to all of those that medaled at state. Just making the state is quite the accomplishment. Then medaling is really, really impressive. And then winning a state title is super impressive. So congratulations to all those medalists, including state champion Brogan Monty, 2-for-2. It's halfway there. You're getting 4-for-4.
Yeah.
Yeah, no pressure. No pressure.
I don't think pressure's a thing that he worries about at all when he's on the mat.
No.
If somebody beats him, they're just better than him. There's just like no question they're better than him.
Right.
That day or just overall. It's been a very impressive run watching him.
Impressive run. Hoxie winning another state
four in a row now. Yeah.
Yeah.
14, I think, in their school's history, but four straight. And you know after round one that the team title's over.
Yeah.
That's just how it is. When you get that many to state, it's hard to it's hard to overcome that.
Yeah, absolutely. Sub-state basketball begins tonight for Class 3A and 2A schools in the area. The Smith Center girls will open up 2A. Oakley Sub-State play a first-round home game tonight. They'll be a heavy favorite. They're the 2-seed, 15-5, hosting a 7-seed Hill City, who's 1-18 at 7 o'clock tonight in Smith Center. And tonight on Katy Country 94, it'll be the Riley County 3A Sub-State, but the top seed, Beloit Trojans, will be at home first round against the 8-seed Minneapolis. Beloit 19-1, ranked number one in the state in 3A, according to the KBCA. Minneapolis 4-16. Beloit was 2-0 against Minneapolis during the regular season. 58-21 win at Minneapolis, 58-25 win at Beloit just 10 days ago. Ryan Eilert on facing Minneapolis for a third time this season.
Well, obviously, they're a team that we're familiar with, and both games against them, we've kind of got off to slow starts and want to see us come out, you know, ready to go from the get-go. And defensively, they've got a kid that can really shoot the ball well, and we can't give him any just wide-open looks. He'll be able to knock probably a few down, but we can't make it easy on him. And need to continue to rebound the ball and take care of it.
Coach, I was talking about the Owen Just. He's a sophomore. It's a very talented player for Minneapolis. But Minneapolis' biggest problem for them this year is just scoring points. Only 21 the first time, 25 the last time. Hung with Beloit for a while, about a quarter and a half. Beloit started to pull away, and then Beloit blew it open in the third quarter just 10 days ago. So Beloit will be a heavy favorite in that one. Other first-round games from the 3A Riley County Substate tonight in boys play. Number 5, Silver Lake will be at number 4, St. Mary's. They've played twice already. Last time they played, St. Mary's won by 3. St. Mary's has beat them twice. That could go either way. And Beloit would get the winner of that one if Beloit would win tonight. And that would be at Riley County on Thursday. Number 2, Rossville hosts number 7, Riley County. Number 3, Neumont Central at home tonight against number 6, Marysville. Once again, our coverage will start tonight at 6:45 on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com. And a live video stream at NCKSSports.com by the Beloit Trojan Channel. Then tomorrow night, we'll have the Beloit girls at Minneapolis. Pregame at 6:45 and tip-off at 7 o'clock for Minneapolis. Third meeting between Minneapolis and the Beloit girls. That'll be the rubber match as Beloit won the first meeting in Minneapolis. Minneapolis won the second meeting in Beloit 10 days ago. And this one will be in Minneapolis. So if the road team keeps winning, that's good. That bodes well for Beloit. Beloit-Minneapolis 4-5 matchup tomorrow night in 3A girls play on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com. Then we'll have more high school basketball for you Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, hopefully from Riley County. And also we'll have 1A Division 1 substate play coming up on Thursday with a doubleheader and then a single game on Friday from Mankato. So we have a busy week in store again.
Absolutely. It doesn't slow down really right now until hopefully we have teams at state, and then after that, then it'll slow down a little bit. But this is the time of year you love to be a part of, right?
Yeah.
Sub-state, state postseason dreams are on the line, and and this is where it all happens. So excited about it.
A little different for me this year because I have
senior,
definitely. And
yeah.
I think I'm starting to stress just slightly because I want them to get the state so bad and then see what happens. You know, just get there. I mean, it's one of those things where I think people just assume, well, you're ranked, you should make it. It's like, no, the number one team in the state in 3A last year was undefeated and lost in the sub-state final. So, and there's been many upsets before in regards to seeding and records and whatever else before you get to state. I know, I think Ryan Iowa told me this, that one year back in the 90s, I forgot what year it was, I forgot because I was at Waukenny and we sucked. Well, we weren't that bad. But anyway, when he played, they had a year where I believe Beloit was either number one in the state and Collegiate was number 2 or vice versa. They were top 2 teams. They had played early in the year. This is according to the story I remember. They played early in the year and everybody just assumed that was a state championship game preview. Not only was there not a rematch, neither one of them made state. The top 2 teams in the state didn't make state.
Yeah.
I think Beloit lost to Republic County, a team they had beaten earlier in the year twice. So there is no guarantees, no matter how good you are. There are no guarantees. And sometimes teams look ahead, and you can't afford to do that.
Not at all.
No.
You
could be going home early.
So J.C. Hoyt's team do that one year, and my alma mater beat them. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Our alma mater, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So... yeah, you got to take everything seriously and be ready to go no matter who you play. Brady Paulin is having his 22nd birthday today, which is about appropriate because he's got the world by the tail. Want to share with what he accomplished at Wichita State?
Yes, it was a great weekend for him, or a great Friday. The Beloit native and St. John's grad, Brady Paulin, claiming his first American Athletic Conference high jump title, highlighting day one of the AAC Indoor Championships in Birmingham. He cleared a season best 2.18 meters, which is 7 feet 1 3/4 inches. So 7 1 3/4 was the jump that we would understand to claim the first ever AAC Indoor high jump title in Shocker history, and it's the first indoor conference high jump title since 2013 in the Missouri Valley Conference for a man named Kerry Graber. So, again, Wichita State's not been in the AAC a long, long time, but it was their first indoor high jump championship in that event. His mark is now 24th. Brady Paulin's mark, 24th in the nation this year in indoor high jump. So congratulations to Brady, and happy birthday, man.
I think the highest I ever jumped in my life might have been more than 7.5 inches, but yeah. 7 feet 1.75, that's 7 feet, almost 2 inches. That's insane. I don't know. I still don't understand watching high jumpers, how they can contort their body and go over a bar that is that high. Just like I can't understand how you can bend the pole and basically half and not snap and kill yourself to go over a bar that's 18, 19, 20 feet high.
Yeah. My thing is, like, the thing that blows my mind about it is, like, high jumpers, like, innately have to be tall, right? Like, you're not going to
have,
like,
short,
like,
you don't
5'10" high jumper.
And they're usually lanky. Lanky.
And so it's like, that's probably obviously part of it is you can't be tall and big, right? Mm-hmm. But I just watched, I remember watching Eric Kennard do it when he was at K-State. It's just, he's jumping 7'5", and it's not even making it look hard, right? And it's like, and Brady's doing 7'1", 7'2" almost. And I think his PR is better than 7'2", if I remember right. But it's like, I don't get it, because like I'm with you. It's like, how do you contort your body when you have to be tall, right? Like, how do you clear all that with that much height?
Yeah, it defies logic.
You get
to
a jump taller than you are, and you clear it all.
Yeah, think about that. He jumps over a 7-footer.
Yeah.
Based off of
that. They literally, the video when Kennard was in college, right? He's literally jumping over Jordan Enriquez Roberts, who's 7 foot, right? Like,
it's crazy. Congratulations to Brady Paul, and that's pretty cool. Plus, happy birthday to him as well. Coming up, we'll turn attention to college basketball. Plus, we will take a look at court storming. Should it be banned after what took place over the weekend between Duke and Wake Forest?
I'm Elijah at Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Did you know that we sell tires? We also perform alignments and all the other services that go along with them. We handle all the top brands. Extras like road hazard warranty, complimentary tire rotations, and complimentary tire repairs are available for purchase on most tires. Right now, we are offering $80 off when you buy a set of 4. Call or stop by Kiever Brothers Automotive for fast, friendly tire services today. Find us just south of the courthouse in Beloit or on the web at KieverBrothers.com.
We played great. First half, we were terrific, and everybody played and contributed, and bench was good, and our starters were all great. And, you know, without Kevin, we don't, obviously our margin of error is even less, but, you know, when the ball moves like that and you guard like that to start a game, that's, you know, you're going to be in a pretty favorable position.
And KU was over the weekend on Saturday over Texas, a team they lost to twice a year ago. KU is dominant, improved to 21-6 overall, 9-5 in the Big 12. They beat Texas 86-67. Texas falls to 6-8 in the Big 12. KU led by 20 at halftime, cruised to a 19-point win. Despite not having Kevin McCullough, all 5 KU starters were in double figures. Hunter Dickinson with 20. KJ Adams, Johnny Furphy each had 16. DeJuan Harris, 14. And Nicholas Timberlake chipped in with 13. And Bill Self had some interesting comments after the game about Kevin McCullough, saying that he's got to have a week of practice if he's going to get going and doing anything, and that he was not going to play tomorrow night against BYU. And he even went as far to say, if we get him back this year. I'm confused. I am confused. And I'm confused because this has now happened to the KU football team, and now we got the KU basketball team. Now, it's not exactly the same because Bill Self is way more open about it.
Yeah.
Lance Leipold, I don't even know if he knew the answers or not. The Jalen Daniels situation is still baffling to me. When he can suit up, be an emergency quarterback, but he can't play, and there was... he's jumping up and down on the sidelines, this and that. I haven't fully figured that one out. The McCullough one is interesting to me because it is a bone bruise. Now, Remy Martin had a injury a few years ago that he had to sit longer than most people thought. And they're like, well, you know, if he has this, why can't he play soon? And it took him a long time. And you know what? KU was pretty smart. That worked out pretty well for them, didn't they? They didn't rush Remy Martin back. Remy Martin was a huge part of them winning a national championship. Without Remy Martin, KU doesn't win a national title a couple years ago with a spark off the bench. So Kevin McCullough sits out, 3 games, and then he plays against Oklahoma. And he was rusty, yes. But I didn't see, like, he was horrible movement-wise. Mm-hmm. KU's defense wasn't bad. He wasn't a liability. I mean, he struggled shooting the 3, but he's not really a great 3-point shooter, although this year he's been pretty solid. He had 10 points, 8 rebounds, and I thought, okay, you know, you got Tuesday BYU, then you got more of a break in between going to Baylor on Saturday, or, you know, you got Texas. But, you know, I thought, well, maybe, you know, I heard he wasn't playing against Texas. Like, well, he's probably, you know, not going to play 2 games in 4 days, whatever. They're going to play against BYU, or they'll get him ready for the Waco game in Waco against Baylor this weekend. And for Bill Self to go out as far as to say, and see, Lance Leipold never said what Bill Self said.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, we may not, that's if we get him back this season. Listen, this Kansas team is going nowhere without Kevin McCullough in regards to the NCAA tournament. They've got to have Kevin McCullough. Can they win a first-round game? Sure. Could they get to the Sweet 16 without Kevin McCullough? If they get the right matchup, I think so, and then they're done. I don't see how they get past the Sweet 16 without Kevin McCullough. I don't even know if they get past the second round with Kevin McCullough, depending on the matchups.
Yeah.
But if Kevin McCullough can't play the rest of the way, Kansas has their struggles on the road with Kevin McCullough. Are they going to win in Waco without Kevin McCullough? It's highly doubtful. Are they going to win in Houston without Kevin McCullough? It's highly doubtful. So then they, at best, would be 11-7 because you assume they would win against BYU tomorrow night, although without McCullough, who knows? And they have K-State, and that's a kind of a payback game after K-State beat them earlier in the year. And it's senior night. KU doesn't lose on senior night, so forth and so on, which would be interesting for McCullough to speak at that after he spoke already last year at senior night. And he'll speak again this year, and maybe he's not even playing. So, you know, Kansas, if they do lose their final two road games, they'll be 11-7. They would be in the Big 12. They'd have eight losses overall, and they're probably looking at a three or a four seed. I think they'll probably still somehow pull out a three seed because of how tough their non-con has been. The big-time wins they have, they'll probably get a three. I would argue that they're not going to be playing like a three going into the tournament unless they get hot without McCullough, or, you know, McCullough comes back and looks great, then all of a sudden that changes everything. But if McCullough, let's say Bill Self is right. I'm not saying right, but I'm saying he says it's possible we won't have him back at all. That's if we get him back. If Kevin McCullough isn't back, or if he is back but not nearly 100%, does that punish them in the NCAA tournament when they get seeded? Does that factor in? We've had injuries in the past in the NCAA tournament where guys get hurt, they're out, or there's some question marks about guys, and sometimes teams get punished. They fall a seed line. Sometimes they stay where they are. Now, I don't think Kansas will get punished because how good their non-con, but that was with Kevin McCullough when they beat those top teams in UConn and Houston and Tennessee. So I think Kansas can be a tough team to seed if McCullough isn't going to play. Now, I believe he's going to play at some point here. I think it's possible that they're going to shut him down and have him ready to go for the Big 12 tournament. I would even possibly say they might shut him down and get him ready for the NCAA tournament. But it doesn't sound very hopeful that he's going to play. He's not playing tomorrow night. Bill Self flat out said that. And Lance Leipold and Jalen Daniels, week in and week out, was like, well, maybe we'll see how practice goes. And eventually, towards close to time, he would say he wasn't. And you could say that's gamesmanship, so the other team has to factor on two quarterbacks to prepare for. But Bill Self, there was no sugarcoating it yesterday or Saturday with Greg Gurley after the game. It even caught Brian Haney by surprise because you could hear, like, whoa, you know, this is more serious than we think. But what's perplexing is he just played against Oklahoma.
It's weird because didn't he play against K-State, was it?
No, he played against
K-State. But like the game before he didn't play, right? Like he had like one game where he didn't play, then he played, and then he didn't play again. And then he played against Oklahoma.
He missed three games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then now he's not playing again. And it's like, because it was somebody asked during the press conference that I was trying to get a cut, you know, on Friday for sports. And somebody had asked during the week, too. And they had asked if McCullough was playing. And Bill Self was like, I don't know. He hasn't practiced yet this week. And I was like, I didn't even realize that was a thing again. Like, I was like, well, he was back against Oklahoma. I just figured he was probably playing again.
Right.
And so all of it was kind of weird to me. Of course, I'm, you know, busy with other things and not being able to focus the whole week on KU basketball, right? But it was like I did not know he wasn't playing. And, yeah, now it's just like, will he play again? That's kind of a bit of a surprise for sure.
He played. He did play against Houston 2 days before.
Yeah.
Against K-State, so he didn't miss the game before K-State. He played.
Maybe it was the game before Iowa Houston State. That he missed or something.
Maybe so. He played Iowa State.
Yeah.
Saturday. Let me check it here.
Because I was thinking that
he missed the Oklahoma State game at home. That's the game he missed. Then okay. He played against Houston. He played against K-State.
Okay. And I was thinking there was one before all this.
He missed the Baylor game. He missed the Texas Tech game. So actually he missed two. So he missed two. After the K-State game, he sat out two games.
Mm-hmm.
Then he was back after they had the big Monday game and then all the way to Oklahoma. Then he played against Oklahoma. Then they didn't even play during
whole
the week.
Off, yeah.
Whole week off. I assumed he'd play against Texas. Yep. I was surprised he didn't. And now he's not going to play against BYU, which means that he's going to miss four of his last five games. And this will be his fifth miss of the year. Fifth game he's going to miss, according to all this. So, yeah, and against Oklahoma, he played 35 minutes. I mean, he didn't, like, they just sprinkle him in. I mean, he played 35 minutes.
So exactly.
It's almost like Bill Self saying, if you're not good enough to play 35 minutes, you're not playing. It makes sense because, you know, if he's not healthy enough to really, I mean, if he's got issues, it's not fair for Bill Self to put McCuller out there and then force him to play 35 minutes. Maybe that's part of the thinking here, is that in a normal situation, if you had lots of depth, yeah, well, Kevin will still play. He'll start, but we're going to limit his minutes, right? Minute restriction. But when, with this team, if he's available to play, Bill doesn't want any minute restrictions.
Yeah, I...
So maybe that's what he's doing. Like, if I can't play you as much as I want, or if I do play you, I'm not. I know deep down I'm going to end up extending you more than I need to because I'm all out to win. Whereas if you just don't play, I'm not tempted to do that. I wonder if that's part of this.
Yeah,
equation.
There's a high school coach that I've talked to this year from the area that has a kid that maybe could play, but he kind of said like, if I can't get all of you, we need all of you, right? Like we need you to be 100% for what we want to do, right?
Right.
And I don't. It's a disservice maybe to you if you do play, right? And we can't get everything, and so that could very well be the situation with Kevin McCuller too, right? Like we can't. If we want to get to where we need to get, we need all of you. We need you to be at least 80 to 90%, right? Like
right.
We got to have you being able to play when I need you on the court, and if not, then we'll develop the guys that are underneath you, and when you're healthy enough to be out here on the court for 35 minutes, we'll get back to you. And so that could very well be the case. Maybe he played 35 against Oklahoma and they're like, yeah, that was too much.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, the bench played pretty well against Texas. You know, McDowell gave him good minutes. He was plus 17. Jackson's plus 18 off the bench. They both played pretty well. I mean, I told this to Brian Haney a couple weeks ago on the show when we had him on, which is brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency every Thursday when we talk KU basketball. And I said, could this be a blessing in disguise, assuming that McCuller comes back and is ready to go, that Timberlake gets these minutes because Bill Self doesn't have many choices here. So Timberlake's got to, you know, he's either sinking or swimming. Well, he's starting to swim after sinking a lot earlier in the year. Jackson, you know, has a bonehead play. He's a freshman, though. Remember that. Only played competitive ball for like 4 years, so he's a super talent, but he's raw. And then there's times where he plays well. And then McDowell, he had been sick. He played pretty well against Texas. Now, maybe it's just a day where you play great, you're at home, and all is good. And maybe do the same thing tomorrow night against BYU. I don't think you can count on that going to Waco to take on Baylor, but who knows? But the blessing in disguise is that these guys get minutes because they have to. And then Bill Self starts to get some trust in these guys to where when McCuller comes back, now you don't have to play McCuller as many minutes, maybe, and you don't have to play your starters as many minutes. And he noted after this game against Texas that, you know, he rotated a little bit more with his bench. I think part of that is because, you know, McCuller's not playing.
Mm-hmm.
And he noticed that his starters played at a higher level because they played, he said, even playing 33 instead of 36 is a big difference. I agree with that. So I think Bill's going to have to suck it up a little bit and be like, you know what? I'm going to have to deal with some of these pains here because I got no choice. I got to get McDowell on the floor. I got to get Jackson on the floor and buy some time. I've got to have Timberlake, obviously, on the floor starting if McCuller's not playing. And Timberlake has played better as of late. So, and maybe that's just getting used to the speed of the game from where he was at. Where was he at? I forgot.
I think he was at Towson.
I want to say Towson, yeah. And then, you know, just getting acclimated and then realizing your coach has some confidence in you bodes well for you on the floor as well. So Kansas is an interesting team, and how they get seeded, especially with the McCuller situation, will be interesting
for sure,
to follow.
Yeah. Yep.
This is the Sports Ticket brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. K-State men won over BYU over the weekend. I had a chance to take my youngest, went to that game. K-State 16-11, 6-8 in conference play. Led most of the way, jumped out to an early 12-2 lead. Go on to win it. BYU ranked 25th. They'll follow the rankings here today. They're 19-8 overall, 7-7 in the Big 12. Arthur Kaluma had a career-high 28 points, 10 rebounds, a double-double for Kaluma. Here is Jerome Tang on Kaluma.
He was really efficient. He took the shots that we wanted him to take. And, I mean, it says 11 shots, but, like, those free throws, right, those were all him being aggressive going downhill. And it doesn't count as a shot, but it counts as points, you know, and that's what we need. And that's something that we need from the whole team. But Art was really good today.
I pointed this out last year when my oldest and I were at the Big 12 basketball tournament. We got to sit closer to the floor for the Texas-TCU semifinal game because there weren't a lot of Texas people that were in Kansas City to watch basketball. They don't care too much about basketball that much down in Texas, so not everything's bigger in Texas and better than you think. But and one thing we noticed as we got closer to the floor is all the traveling that takes place.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty bad. And so we had pretty good seats for the K-State game, and we were sitting behind the one goal back towards the K-State bench. And I'm watching this, and I'm just, isn't that a travel? Am I losing my mind? Isn't that a travel? Like, Kaluma, I think, travels half the time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, every time I saw him, I'm like, is there a pivot foot that you need anymore? And Will McNair, he actually, I think, deflates the basketball when he catches it in the post. I mean, this is like the old Charles Barkley, pound it 20 times, turn and take a fadeaway on the baseline. Now, McNair doesn't usually take a fadeaway. He tries to back his guy down, and then all of a sudden a guard comes and pokes it away, and it's loose on the floor. It's like, dude, make a move and go. This isn't the old days, okay?
Yeah.
And he's pounding the ball when he catches it. The shot clock's winding down, and the ball isn't there. K-State's ball movement is up and down. When they move it, they're pretty good. When they don't, they're just like any other team. The ball sticks. When it gets to McNair, it sticks. So that stood out. Now, he had some good plays in the game. But K-State won. BYU was 6 of 31 for 3, and they rely on the 3. They just didn't shoot it very well the other day. And K-State got a good win. And K-State's schedule the rest of the way is somewhat favorable for them to put some wins together, starting tonight against Josh Eilert in West Virginia. It'll be his first opportunity to coach Eilert. Josh to coach at Manhattan. He, of course, was there in with Bob Huggins and grad assist and all that. And so K-State is hosting West Virginia. West Virginia 9-18 overall, 4-10 in the conference, as they lost Iowa State on Saturday 71-64. And I know that you say that K-State's not going to make the tournament. And, you know, I can't disagree with you. At the same time, you look at K-State's schedule, and we've talked about this before, that, you know, the beginning of the schedule was soft. And what happened? K-State got off to a decent start. Then we talked about, well, yeah, we're going to find out about K-State and what they do when they play a tougher schedule. And then they started the struggle. They're 16-11 overall, 6-8 in the Big 12. They are 13-3 at home. They have really struggled on the road, as has about everybody in America, to be quite honest, in fairness to Kansas State and Jerome Tang. But the games that they got coming up, they have West Virginia at home, Cincinnati on the road, winnable. Not saying they're going to win it. I'm just saying it's winnable. Cincinnati's not all that. West Virginia clearly has struggled this year. You go to Kansas, no Kevin McCullough. Now you have a better chance of winning that game. Not saying you do, but you have a much better chance if McCullough doesn't play. And then Iowa State at home, you know, I mean, that'll be senior day for K-State. It'll be in Manhattan. K-State plays way better at home than on the road. So, listen, if you beat West Virginia, beat Cincinnati, assume you lose to Kansas, and you beat Iowa State, okay? So you hold serve at home. You get one on the road against Cincinnati. You're 19-12. And you would be 9-9.
Yeah.
That's not enough?
I don't.
9-9 in conference, and the toughest conference in America, 9-9 is not enough because the non-con is so bad?
Because the non-con is so bad, and there's one win, I think, in the conference that really stands out, right?
If you beat Iowa Kansas. State, that would be two.
That'd be two if you can beat Iowa State. Mm-hmm. So I get that, but they just don't have anything worth anything in the non-con,
I know.
In my eyes.
No, I don't see
it. And so because these teams that they beat that were overtime wins or, you know, buzzer-beating wins against Villanova, whatever it might be, those are not teams that are, like, at the top echelon right now, right?
Their best non-conference win is Providence, who's on the bubble.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. And that was an overtime win in whatever tournament they went to, you know, Thanksgiving, I think, is
Bahamas.
One of those. Bahamas, yeah.
They beat Villanova by one. Villanova's not what they want.
And then got bombed by Miami after they beat Providence, right? That's mm-hmm. the thing, is like those games are hurting them so bad, I think. Mm-hmm. Like the Miami loss, the USC loss to start the season. USC's not good at all.
If you beat Nebraska, that would have been a decent win.
The Nebraska
they lost.
Bombed us at home, yes. Right? Like it was not even a game. And it's just those things, and, you know, LSU.
I guess you do have a win over Baylor. I mean, there's a win over Baylor.
Yeah, I forgot about that because it was so long ago, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got the win over Baylor, but both of those are at home, too, right?
Right.
So, you know, you've got two wins, Baylor and KU at home, and it doesn't really matter where those are at. If you're beating teams that are ranked in the top 10, it's going to help your resume. I get that. But I just don't think there's enough there. If they would win out, if they win at Kansas and go 4-0 to finish, then I think we're going to be able to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't see that happening.
So they got to win out, is what you're saying.
That's what I think. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong.
I went out. I think you're in. You're 10-8 in conference.
He had two wins over KU.
Yeah, I think you're
in. That's where you put him. But still in means being one of the last ones in.
Right.
But I say in because you got two wins over KU and one of them on the road. I don't like the resume. That's basically where I'm at.
The Big 12 men's basketball tournament, I was going over this last night. The tournament will be different this year because you have 14 teams in Kansas City. Yeah. So the Big 12 men's tournament will be at T-Mobile Center in Kansas City. It will start on Tuesday. So you'll have your 14 playing the 11 and the 13 playing the 12. So if the season ended today, Cincinnati would be 11, they would take on West Virginia to 14. Oklahoma State would be the 13, take on Central Florida at 12. And K-State's just barely outside of playing on that first day because right now they're sitting in the 10 spot. Okay?
Yeah,
so losing tonight would really hurt them immensely across the board every which way possible. So if a win boosts their chances of earning a bye in the Big 12 tournament for that missing that first day. Because you don't want to have to play five games in 5 days. Nobody does.
You cannot lose tonight.
No.
For anything that you want.
And if you win, then you still have a glimmer of hope for the rest of the way with Cincinnati on the road. And then you got at KU, and then you host Iowa State. So, you know, two road games there, of course. I don't think you're expecting to win both. But you could put yourselves maybe squarely on the bubble. We shall see. And then remember, the top four seeds in the Big 12 tournament will get the first two days off. So then you've got games on Tuesday. I call them feather bracket games, play-in games. Then Wednesday, you're playing into the quarterfinals. So if you're one of the top four seeds, you're automatically in the quarterfinals. You don't have to win three games in 3 days to win the tournament. So right now, Houston's the one, Iowa State's the two, Kansas is the three. TCU, Baylor, and Texas Tech are all tied for the four. So there's quite a lot of jockeying for position for seeding for the Big 12 tournament. And Houston, of course, with a huge win over Baylor in overtime. If the Baylor guy makes the free throw, but he didn't. He tied the game, but then missed the free throw. They went to overtime. Houston, a big road win over Baylor, 82-76. Iowa State beat West Virginia. So Houston's in the driver's seat right now for the Big 12 title. And number 23, Texas Tech, lost at Central Florida, 75-61. And they're, once again, a ranked team that lost on the road to an unranked team.
Yeah.
TCU beat Cincinnati by 18. Oklahoma won. Oh, what an amazing ending of that game. You talk about Bedlam. Oklahoma at Oklahoma State, the final meeting between those two, perhaps, with Oklahoma going to the SEC. Oklahoma State looks like they're going to get the win. Oklahoma, a little scramble play, hits a three at the buzzer to win it, 84-82. Oh, man, Oklahoma State fans, just... Have that happen in your own gym.
Yeah.
That's tough to deal with. So also the Big 12 tournament this year, you're going to have the women's tournament's going to be at the T-Mobile Center for the first time as well, the 7th through the 12th. And so the very first day of the tournament for the Big 12 men, they're going to play their games 11:30 and 2, and then that night of the men's tournament will be the women's championship game, which I think is awesome. Uh-huh. I think it's cool that they're going to do that. And by the way, Wichita State men continue to struggle. They lost 72-66 in overtime at home to Temple, who was not very good. Shockers are 3-12 in the AAC. Speaking of women's basketball, it was a Sunflower Showdown in Lawrence and a crushing blow for K-State if they want to win a Big 12 conference title.
Sanchez, right side, up front for Glenn. First knocked away, saved by the Cats. Sides, deep three at the buzzer. No good! No good! KU wins! KU wins 58-55.
Ayoka Lee, only 7 of 21 from the floor. And she's not 100%, by the way. I don't want to make excuses for her, but she's not. But she had a big game against West Virginia before that. 14 points, 11 rebounds. KU's won 6 of the last 7, and they're putting themselves in a position to make the NCAA tournament. They're now 9-7 in the Big 12. K-State, a costly loss for them to get a Big 12 title or a share.
Yeah. There's a lot. Well, I was in a discussion with a family member yesterday about Ayoka Lee, and because talking about how she didn't play well, and I'm like, yeah, she didn't shoot well, but if she wasn't on the floor yesterday, that's a double digit win for Kansas based on the way that game started.
Yeah,
and you know, like you said, she's not healthy. She's also going up against an athletic big that has the most block shots in the Big 12 this year in Tayana Jackson. Mm-hmm. And she can adjust to what Yoki's doing. She got deep a couple times and missed some she shouldn't have missed.
Well, Yoki isn't someone's going to play above the rim.
Yeah, okay?
She just doesn't have a lot of lift, and she has the ankle issues.
Yeah, and there's a lot of officials that are going to let a lot of people do what they want to Yoki because they let her do what she wants to other people, too, sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so Tayana Jackson probably got away with some fouls yesterday, but that's the way the game was called, right? And she made it hard for Lee, and she's made it hard for everybody in the league this year. She's averaging 3 block shots a game. It's not like this is somebody that you just go dominate. And so Yeah, but she struggled offensively. There's no question. But if she wasn't on the floor, that have been, Tiana Jackson probably would have had 35 points, and it would have been a disaster. That's the way that game started.
If the K-State women are going to get a share of the title, here's the scenario. They need to win their last two. They need Oklahoma to lose to Texas. The bad thing is Oklahoma and Texas are both ahead of K-State. So yeah. They need Oklahoma to lose to Texas coming up on Wednesday at home in Norman. And then they need Oklahoma to lose at Kansas. Now, those are both possibilities. I mean, they very well, that could happen. Let's see Texas, though. You want them to beat Oklahoma, so then they're 14-3. Then they're at home against BYU. So you need an upset
They're not losing to BYU at home.
Yeah. So basically,
maybe I'll eat crow on that, but I didn't know.
So what we're basically saying is that K-State's loss to Kansas more than likely killed any chances of winning the Big 12.
Yeah.
It was a costly loss. And KU needed to win to build their resume. K-State's got Iowa State at home, which they lost in double overtime early in the year. And then they got to go to Texas Tech, and there's no guarantee K-State wins that. So
yeah, and as long as Yoki was out, I'm surprised they were even in it this late into the conference season. Mm-hmm. Like, if this team's 100% healthy and going, and I think that's obviously the goal, then it's a different team. But you know, they had to fight to get wins just to keep themselves in that discussion.
Yeah.
And they did it.
They did.
You know, they fought through some games that they should have won by 10, 15 points that they're winning at the buzzer. But, you know, but that's a sign of a team that is pretty dang good, right?
Yeah.
And if they can put it all together and be healthy, then – but that's – I don't know if Yayoka is going to be healthy the way they need her to be healthy the rest of the year.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Now, the bigger thing for K-State is to be in the top 16.
Yeah.
So you can get the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament at home at Bramlage, where K-State is undefeated at 15-0. That would be huge. If you could host the first two, then, you know, if you keep winning at home like you always do, then, boom, you're in the Sweet 16. Now, who knows? Get the right matchup.
That's not looking good now after that loss to KU either.
No, that hurts. There's no that loss to KU was a major, major, major loss for Kansas State women, no doubt about it. The Royals are in action. They started spring training, and if I can get this dumb little cookie notice or whatever this thing is, they lost to the Rangers 5-4 on Saturday. I checked that. They won on Saturday. They lost to the Rangers 5-4 on Friday. And then Saturday, they won 5-4, and then they won 1-0 yesterday. So the boys in blue are 2-1. Seth Lugo will make his Royals debut in spring training. One of the free agent pitchers they picked up today against the Cubs at 2:05. And Cole Reagans looked rust-free in his Cactus League debut. Could he be an outlier for a dark horse for Cy Young? I mean, that guy pitched as well as anybody in the second half of the season last year. Strikeouts are amongst the best in baseball. I mean, what a find this kid's been.
Yeah.
And then that goes back to Royals doing something right. Took the flyer on Aroldis Chapman, turned him into Cole Reagans. That's the type of things that the Royals have to do in order to, you know, get better. And so Royals are underway in spring training. All right. Just after or over a month after Iowa women's basketball star Caitlin Clark collided on the court with an unidentified woman amid an Ohio State victory celebration, Duke's Kyle Filipowski was injured Saturday as a wave of Wake Forest fans rushed their home court after the Demon Deacons' 83-79 win over number 8 Duke. A fan ran into Filipowski, and the Duke star hobbled off the court with help from teammates. "This got to change," Filipowski posted on Twitter or X after the game. Duke head coach John Shire called for court storming to be banned, and Wake Forest head coach Steve Forbes agreed. Said Shire, "How many times does a player have to get into something where they get punched or they get pushed or they get taunted right in their face? It's a dangerous thing." The incidents have sparked concern and scrutiny, and they have prompted a fresh round of questions about court storming. Should it be allowed? Can it be prevented? If it does happen, what are schools and conferences doing to protect the players, coaches, and officials? How does event staff prepare? What conference policies or penalties are in place? What's the harm anyway? Why is there debate? Yeah, lots of questions. I'm going to start here with this one. I've never understood it. And here's what I've never understood about it. I understand the fans' passion. I understand the excitement of court storming or field storming, because it happens in college football all the time. And there's more room to roam on a football field, but there's even more people on a football field. And I always worry about the safety of people as soon as I see these things. And, of course, we saw an incident with KU and K-State some years back there in Manhattan. this is not the first time there's been incident. It's just that they're highly publicized with the social media and the TV and the coverage and everything else. And now you got prominent programs involved. Iowa's Caitlin Clark, you know, stars. Kyle Filipowski is one of the best players in America. And then, of course, you got Duke involved. And so now it becomes a bigger thing because of the schools that are involved, the players that are involved, that are high-profile institutions or individuals. But this has been going on for quite some time. This is not something new. And that's the way we roll in America. Like, oh my God. This, well, you know, it's been going on. It's just it didn't happen to a marquee thing or person or whatever. But the thing I've never understood about court storming is it's trespassing. I'm like, when did it start and how was it allowed to start? Because it is trespassing. And it's just like, does the National Football League, there's no field storming after the Chiefs win a Super Bowl. You didn't see the fans come flying out. When the Chiefs won the AFC title game, did you see the field storm with Chiefs fans or Arrowhead? I didn't see any.
Not on any
you?
Of them, nope.
No. So then here's the thing I hear. Here's the excuses I hear. You can't stop court storming or you can't stop field storming because there's not enough people to stop it. You're outnumbered. Security's outnumbered. Then why doesn't that happen in NFL? Why doesn't it happen in NBA? You have them outnumbered. Care to help me on that one? Why does it not happen in the NFL? Why does it? Now, listen, you have tons of drunk. Listen, you got streakers that run on the field during a Super Bowl for crying out loud. People go on the field. That's just a person here or there, and they legally, and they get absolutely waylaid by security, which I think is a deterrent, obviously. But, I mean, what's to stop 10,000 Chiefs fans from just going ahead and storming the field after the Chiefs knock off, you know, next year in the AFC title game with the Ravens? You know, act like you've been there before, right? Because the Chiefs have won three of the last four. But what's to stop the Houston Texan fans for winning a first playoff game in so many years or beating the Chiefs in the AFC title game in Houston? What's stopping them from storming the field? There's way more people than there are security. Do you have to jump over a barrier? Well, you do sometimes in basketball, and you definitely have to do in college football. Why is it different? I don't hear of anything about NFL teams going to get fined. I haven't heard about that. Yeah. College has all kinds of policies. The school's going to get fined $25,000, $100,000. Every conference has this policy for the most part, where they're going to fine if there's court storming. They're going to fine if you storm the field after a college football game. And by the way, Duke stormed the field after an upset win over Clemson so many years ago and went nuts, and nobody cared then. And everything's good as long as nobody gets seriously hurt. And it's a stampede of people. It's not safe. It never is safe. And the Wake Forest thing, like, happened before the clock had officially run out. I mean, it was like, there was no... And so part of the blame is on the staff of Wake Forest. But once again, when you're sitting here and saying, the staff, there should have been better things in place, and Wake Forest should have been able to get Duke off the floor in a timely and efficient, safe manner. And at the same time, you're talking out of the other side of your mouth saying, well, you're outnumbered. There's nothing you can do. Wait a minute. You just said that they could do more. Well, if they're outnumbered and the fans storm the court with 1 second left in the game, do you think you're going to get them all back into the stands? So you're outnumbered. So how in the world can you get Duke players off for safety if the game technically had just, literally zeros? These athletes are pretty amazing, but they can't fly in the air and go over the people storming and then land safely in the locker room. And I don't know what you do with security-wise. I mean, could things have been better at Wake Forest? Probably. But I don't know. When you sit here and you say, well, we're outnumbered and there's thousands of people and there's only so much security, well, wouldn't that apply to it's hard to keep players safe when they're rushing the court, right? I mean, literally, as soon as it zeros or before it hits zeros? I don't know what the answer is, but I've always thought that it's trespassing. And that you've got video of all these people, you could throw a lot of people in the slammer. If you threw so many people in the slammer, I think it would deter it pretty quickly. But yet they don't.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, like, well, that's assault. What happened to Caitlin Clark? I think that was blown out of proportion. I think this is blown out of proportion as well. Although it is not safe. I feel scared. I've said this for a long time, and it's actually happened, but just not at a big time prominent institution. But if Kyle Filipowski gets run into there, and he turns and knocks a kid, a student, flat out, knocks him out, lays him on his ass, okay? And I would say he has every right to do that because you should not be on the floor. You know, the security guard can absolutely lay out a fan coming onto a field. In fact, Kevin Harlan calls it, it's all funny, right? You see these videos where some idiot says, I'm going to jump into the baseball field, and then he gets absolutely drilled. I mean, laid out. And you have every right to lay out that person. They trespassed, okay? So they're not going to get assault charged on the security guy. He's doing his job. Well, if Kyle Filipowski, granted, is not a security guard, that's not his job to punch somebody. But at the same time, he has a right to self-defense. And if somebody's getting in his face, or if he thinks he feels threatened, what's to not stop him from absolutely just decking a kid and dropping him cold? You know what that kid will do in his family? They'll probably sue him. And it's ridiculous. You cannot be out. I mean, that's trespassing. You should not be on the floor ever until the games are all over and you're allowed to come down to shoot free throws after a game, whatever the case may be. So I've never fully understood how this has all been, and I'm not trying to be, you know, Debbie Downer here. I've never felt like I've ever wanted to storm the floor, but I never had the opportunity at the college as I was, so maybe I would if I was that age. I'm not trying to tell students not to have fun. If they allow it, then I say, yeah, go ahead, you do it. But it is starting to get out of hand. There's no doubt about that. But I'm just waiting for the day when you have a massive brawl after the game and players take out students. And you keep doing this, it's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot that I want to counterpoint off of what you said. The first one is, why does this not happen in the NFL? I think that the key thing that you just said is this is like a student experience, right? Mm-hmm. Like, these students go and they have their opportunity to storm the court, right? And I know there's a lot of drunk people. I will say, at Arrowhead Stadium, that's a hell of a jump from the seats down to the field. And that a lot of people are not going to make that from as high as those bleachers are from the field.
Well, I've sat very front row this year. It's not that big of a jump to
really?
Get on there. No, it's not that
bad.
It
looks like it is.
It's not that bad. No, all you got to do is go climb over the rail and just drop yourself. What? You probably got to, you drop 2 feet once you're over the actual rail and
yeah.
drop 2 feet.
I mean,
or 3
it looks
feet.
Like when you're looking at the sidelines, that's higher than it is. Like, it looks like it's as high, as tall as the people are.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Maybe it's a little taller than what I'm saying, but it's not something that would deter
me. It is not.
It would
a
not deter. It what would I'm, not deter me from.
Yeah.
If I wanted to do it, that's not going to deter me. And I've seen a lot of college football games where fans are going over barriers that are, you know, probably not much shorter than what you see.
Well, what I'll tell you about K-State is it is not a problem to get on the field.
Right.
It is very, very easy.
Yes.
There's like maybe a 3 to 4 foot fence in front
yes,
of you at
it
the
is
most.
Not hard. You're right.
And so, and you can crawl on somebody's back and just go, right? But I really think most of that is the student thing and the experience that those kids are saying, hey, I want to have this experience. I don't think that's prevalent at an NFL football field or an NBA stadium, and obviously there's not a precedent that's been set to do that either.
Right.
Nowadays, with what you see in college, the precedent has been there for a long time, and so I think that's probably the biggest difference that I see from it. As far as if the kid wanted to punch the dude if he ran out and knocked him over, the precedent was set for that as well. I remember when Missouri beat Nebraska in the mid-2000s, and Missouri rushes their field, and this Nebraska kid just clocks a Missouri guy, a Missouri fan that comes out onto the field, just decks him and lays him out. And this was back when I was actually still watching ESPN programming, and they had a deal on one of their shows, like, should this kid sue? And they're like, well, good luck with that, because he's trespassing onto a field he's not supposed to be on.
Right.
And so they said that way back then. It's like, yeah, you can try to sue this kid, but you're on a field that you're not supposed to be on, that he is supposed to be on.
Mm-hmm.
And so good luck with that, right? Like, because that's how the college can come back. It says right on the ticket that you have to not enter the field of play, to not leave. There are certain areas you can't be in, and that's on there for a reason. And so now you don't have an actual physical ticket, but I guarantee you, if you look at your mobile ticket, it's somewhere in the parameters and the things that you can and can't do are on that fine print somewhere, wherever you got your ticket from. And so, yeah, it absolutely is trespassing. And I always laugh at the people that try to blame this on security. Like, you didn't have enough security here.
You'll never have enough.
You're never going to have that. You can't sit here and act like security is going to be able to stop anything. There's 10 security people for 1,000, every 1,000 kids that are going to run at you, probably, at most, right?
You could put 100 security people around, and there's 16,000 people. You ain't going to stop it.
What am I going to have, like, 1,000 people in green shirts around the edge of this place, which you can't fit in there anyway? But even if you did, it's like, well, I got 8,000. And kids about ready to bowl them all over. So what do you, like, you can't, I don't understand, like, because Bill Self did that time it happened, right? Like, he was mad at the security at K-State when Jamari Traylor got chicken winged, like you said, right? But it's like, what are they supposed to do?
I agree.
Well, here's what needs to happen, too, is like, and and I understand that this shouldn't happen, and you shouldn't have to worry about this. But you're at the end of that game. I watched the video of this Duke Wake Forest thing. Like you can see those kids about ready to rush.
Oh, yeah.
They're all around the entire place. As coaches for Duke, you gotta be like, hey, this is going to get out of hand probably if we don't win this game. And he can't lacklusterly walk off the court like he's doing either. You got to have some situational awareness
I
think.
But see, I will totally disagree with you on that because of the fact you just contradict yourself right before that. And that is, well, they have to have more situational awareness. They're on the road. That is their haven. The basketball floor is their place to play. They should be able to crawl off. They should be able to drop and cry after a loss. And they should be able to take their time to get out
the court.
I'm
not saying they should.
No. I know. But you said about awareness and this and that. Listen, you said you could see all these fans getting ready to converge on the floor. It's not the player's responsibility, in my opinion, to have to run off the floor because a whole bunch of people violate the law and trespass.
No,
their job is to play the game and have the right to leave the court accordingly without having to get mob rushed.
Listen, I don't disagree with what you say.
So if Kyle Filipowski wants to stand and look at the scoreboard and be distraught for 5 minutes, he can. That is where he's allowed to play. I'm not going to go with that at all. Well, they should have awareness. I understand the coaches should be aware.
That's what I'm saying, the coaches need to let them know.
To like get off the floor quicker, the player's just strolling or whatever. No, the player can stroll, crawl, they can sit, and they can take a nap as far as I'm concerned. They have a right to be there. Until somebody tells them to get the hell off the court, they don't have to get off the court. So I don't think a player has to be sitting there going, oh my God, as soon as the game's over, I got to worry about running to the locker room. You shouldn't have to worry about that.
I 100% agree that you shouldn't have to worry about it.
Right.
But if I'm in that situation and I need to make a decision and I don't want to be trampled, I'm going to move a little faster. That's what I'm saying.
Well, what I'm saying is you're blaming the player for not moving as fast is how it comes across.
Well, I'm saying that because I know if I'm in that situation and I see like people about to rush this court, I've been out there like on a K-State field when that's happening because I wanted to kind of see what was going on at the center of the field, and then they rushed the field when they beat Oklahoma, right? And so you know where you need to be and where you don't. And I'm just saying as a person, if I'm in the situation and I see all that about to come at me, I'm not just going to casually walk off the court.
First of all,
I'm not saying that he should be in that situation. That sucks for him.
At what point is he supposed to rush off the court, Dusty? Because the clock had just hit zero. The fans are coming from every single angle imaginable.
And
where the hell is he supposed to go? And here's the other thing. If he runs off, he's going to run over people and hurt more people running off. You know how I know that? Because people running onto the floor ran into him and hurt him. So he might be better off trying to mosey his way through slowly instead of just sprinting. He was surrounded instantly. The only way he could have avoided it is leave the floor before the game was over.
I don't know. There seemed to be a spot where he could have just gone straight to the sideline and been all right. From the video I watched,
I was trying to go to the side and he got freaking ramrodded by some fan with taunting him with a camera phone. I mean, he happened to be where the game. You know, the reason he's out there is because that's where he was when the game ended. Okay, other players were in different parts of the floor. So by pure bad luck, he's in the middle of this, and maybe he wasn't. Listen, he maybe wasn't aware of. I mean, he's focusing on his team down four, trying to still somehow pull out a miracle. Okay, and you want your players focused on the game, right? So the last thing that Kyle Filipowski should really be looking at or worrying about as a player is, oh my God, how am I going to get off the floor? Because I can see the fans about ready to oh, here's the pass. I'm supposed to catch it. I mean, no, he can't be worrying about a whole bunch of people ready to run the court and stampede onto the court. He's got to worry about doing his job, which he's on scholarship to do. That's play basketball. As soon as the horn, and you hear the final horn, okay, now his job is to, well, not a job, it's just I need to leave the floor or go into the handshake line. Well, I can't do that when there's hundreds of people in the way of the handshake line. I'm at the free throw circle, and I got people coming from every which direction. And by the way, you have a split second. I think it's easy for you and me to sit here and say, well, I should have gone in a certain direction. Listen, if you're in the middle of a mob scene, you're not really got a lot of time to go, okay, tactically, I should go to this door. Well, my locker room is way over there. I mean, that's another thing. You're supposed to go where your locker room is. Kyle Filipowski, well, he should have gone to the sideline. What if his locker room's clear on the other side? Do we know this by watching the video?
The bench is where he was walking toward. Okay. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Well, go there. That's.
I don't see how you're supposed to get there and beat the people there when they're on the floor before the damn game was over.
Well, they weren't on the floor before the game was over.
Well, right at 0-0-0. Go back and watch.
I watched it a lot of times. And I'm just saying, I'm just putting myself, if I'm in that situation and I'm a Duke player and I know what's about to happen.
What I'm saying is maybe he doesn't know what's about to happen immediately because he's sitting here thinking about what he's supposed to do on the floor.
Yeah, that part of it's hard for me to believe. I guess the coach has got to prepare you for that, I feel like.
I guess I'm sitting here going, their job's to play basketball. And if we're sitting here and we're going to start saying that their job is to know the quickest exit route off an opposing team's floor, then we're screwed. If that's what we're going to put the responsibility on.
And I'm not putting the responsibility on him.
And the player to get off the floor in a timely, safe manner. Here's an idea. Maybe, just maybe, we could somehow stop the fans from rushing the floor, God forbid, 15, 20 seconds so the players can get off the floor.
Right? Yeah.
Well, you can do that. You could have way more security to slow them down. You're not going to stop them.
You can't have that much security.
I'm just saying, there's not enough room down there. It's possible to do it.
I just don't think that is.
Listen, you have a whole bunch of fans all the way around the arena. You can put somebody all the way around. You could. If you want to spend the money and find enough bodies, you could. Would it slow it down? Hell yeah, it would slow it down. So you slow down the procession of people going on the floor. You're not going to stop it. When you slow it down, now maybe there's two areas where Kyle Filipowski can feel safe to leave the floor.
Yeah.
Listen, I know it's unrealistic, but it's not impossible.
Yeah. I don't know. I had this conversation with two other people that completely agreed with what I'm saying right now.
I don't care. I can have people that can agree with me.
I do want to put that out, right?
Like, congratulations.
This is not something that I just came up with. And I feel like I would love,
because first of all, you've never been in that situation as a player.
Not as a player.
I haven't either.
Absolutely.
So I think it's super easy from afar, just like the national talking heads, to sit here and say, Kyle Filipowski should have done something differently. First of all, you don't know what was going through his head at the time.
No, I don't.
It could be
absolutely,
and I don't. And I think we should go ahead and put you and me outside the radio station. Put us right over by the water well. All right, and I want a whole bunch of people. Okay, we're in the middle of an arena, but we'll be outside, and I want you to put 16,000 people all the way around us. Okay, all right, and you know where the door is to this radio station. Okay, and I want to see how quickly you think and figure out how to beat those people before you get run over, run into, and get to the radio station door. And I'll bet you won't be able to do it. And I'll bet you I wouldn't be able to do it, especially when you're trying to focus on something else, which is playing the game, being on the floor. Now, could he be closer to his exit or whatever the case may be? I haven't navigated and put a whole map together on the layout of the arena. What I'm saying is the fact that people are blaming a player because he didn't go off the floor fast
enough.
I'm not blaming him.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you. But it does come across as you're putting responsibility on a player.
I'm just talking about what could happen and what could be done in those situations to avoid what happened to the man on Saturday. I'm not saying that he had to go do it.
We can do this with a car accident. If you didn't go as fast, you wouldn't have been in an accident.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, somebody's got to know exactly what's coming there. There's somebody on the coaching staff that these kids are lined up ready to storm this court.
Do you know exactly that a kid's going to come with a camera phone and taunt
you? No, you don't know.
Well, I don't know any of that part of it. I mean,
but I do know that if I know this is coming, if in my mind I know this is coming, it's hard for me to believe that he doesn't know this is coming when his
even if he does know it's coming, what the hell do you want him to do? Leave the game before it's over?
What I'm saying is, if I'm putting myself in that position, I'm pretty confident. If I know I'm about to get stormed, I'm not gonna hang my head and just slowly walk off the court.
So you're going to run full speed.
I'm not going to run full speed.
People run into you and take you out, or you take somebody else out. That's probably, you know, what's actually really unsafe about this whole thing is not the guy standing still on the damn court.
No, it's not.
What's the unsafe part is a whole bunch of people running full speed as a stampede onto a floor.
Absolutely.
So we're going to talk about the guy that didn't run like a dumbass. We're going to say that guy should have navigated his way off the floor and has to be more aware. No, the dumbasses that some didn't even pay come on the floor need to be aware of the damn players and avoid them. It is not Kyle Filipowski's job, and I'm not a Duke fan, but I'm supporting any college athlete. If you're going to sit here and tell me it's his responsibility to get off the floor before he gets mobbed by people. No.
It's
the responsibility of the university to protect the players.
Absolutely.
And that's what Duke is arguing, and they are right.
And I don't disagree with that.
Yeah. So if we're gonna focus on, well, he should have been more aware, or he knew it was coming, what the hell? I mean, yeah, okay, there's a car coming right at me. I know it's coming, but I really could go to the right, flip my car and die, or take my chances, I get sideswiped and I survive. I mean, I don't know what he is supposed to do differently. If he runs like a madman, scared for his life, as some people apparently think he should have, and he runs over a poor innocent cheerleader or some poor young person and knocks them on the floor and they hit their head on the floor and get knocked out, why did Kyle Filipowski have to do that? He could have just smoothly, calmly left the court in a timely manner. My point is, first of all, why does he get criticized or second-guessed at all on this thing is people missing the point. Completely missing the point. It shouldn't happen.
It shouldn't happen. I don't disagree.
It shouldn't
with that
happen.
At all.
And just because it has happened, you know what? We used to not have indoor plumbing either, but you know what? We found out another way to do it. To sit here and say, well, that's just the way it is. I am so sick of that crap. I've heard this over and over. I've heard it with the 8-man games when we first got tied with that. I've heard it from people over and over the years. Well, this is just the way we do it. Well, you know what? Time's going to pass you by. Get out of here for right now, okay? I'm not in the mood to deal with you right now, okay? Now, the thing is, you've got to adjust. And the key is the safety of the players. And the fact that we are going to put any kind of blame or responsibility, whether you are saying that indirectly or directly, to a person that is on the floor, whose job is to play basketball, who is on scholarship to represent the University of Duke in this situation. And we're sitting here talking about the minutiae of he should have exited more quickly. He should have known his surroundings better. He should have been aware of the mob scene that was going to happen on top of him. Wow. I tell you what, I think we really do need to get a whole bunch of people together and just take turns and just get surrounded and then just have somebody running at you at full speed. And as you're trying to figure out exactly where all these people are coming from, which you know they're coming from all directions, not just one direction, I want to see how great your spatial awareness is then. And I'm not trying to pick on you. I'm talking about some of these people have actually come out and gone further than you, Dusty. I don't know if you're aware of this. There are people
that don't pay attention to any of that stuff.
People have gone further than you. They've gone further than you. And they've said that he's the one initiated the contact, and he put out his arms. First of all, he has a right to self-defense.
If he wanted to punch the kid, I wouldn't have said anything about it.
I agree.
If
he wants to trip the kid, punch the kid in the face, I don't care. And you're sitting like, well, you're condoning violence, Wade. You're the dumbass that trespassed on the floor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fair game, baby.
I 100% let me tell you loved something. It when you, that Nebraska football player punched the Missouri fan.
Let me tell you what. I'm going to tell you something. People that break into people's houses and get shot, I don't give a damn they got shot. They're the dumbass that went into there and trespassed. They know it's wrong. There's the consequences for your
absolutely.
Actions.
Absolutely.
So I don't understand what Kyle Filipowski is getting criticized for today. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't like Duke, but that doesn't mean he's not a human
being.
Like,
on my end, I'm not trying to criticize
Kyle. And he got hurt!
I'm just thinking about, like, I don't know, I'm just putting myself in the spot, right? Like, and understanding that I know this is going to happen. Like, Bill Self knows until this year, right, when they said that, you know, stay in the stands for the K-State students. Like, they know that when this happens, this court's getting stormed. And I think Duke probably knows that, too, when they go on the road and they beat a team like Wake Forest or, you know, somebody else, whoever it might be, say the Georgia Tech, right? Somebody like that. They're probably going to storm the court. So I just...
Some court stormings happen faster than others,
based on
their environment.
Yeah.
Like, we just talked about the walls and the arenas. You said it's super easy at K-State to do it. Some other places, it's not as easy.
Yeah.
So
and
you
most,
have a little bit more time.
So outside of, I would say, maybe Vanderbilt, most college in Minnesota who have, like, elevated floors, right? Like, I would say most college arenas are going to be not that difficult to get out onto the court. I think football fields are going to be a little different because of the height of how you got to jump out. But I don't know. Like I said, I'm not trying to criticize the man. I'm just saying what I said. But trying to put myself in that situation. And so, like I said, it is not his fault. I'm not putting it on him. There are a lot of things that I said, obviously, before I even brought that part up, right? It needs to – I don't know how you put the genie back in the bottle, because people are getting fined for this. Schools are getting fined for it, and
the schools
don't
fined.
Care.
The kids don't get
no,
fined.
No, they don't get fined at all. But the schools need to – the schools are the ones that are going to have to do something about it if they want to stop getting fined. And I don't know how they do that. Like, I don't know how you put it back in when it's been this way for so long that – you can't, like you said, security's not going to stop it.
Do they ever
don't have enough people.
Do they ever announce at a ball game? Because I've never been at a court storming. Do they ever announce at the end of the game that you will be prosecuted and that you could be arrested if you trespass and come on the floor?
I don't think
I've ever heard.
Not
that.
At the end. They actually when I first started going to K-State games, I remember they would have something kind of like a statement before the game, like 15 when everybody's in the locker room, right? When you know not everybody's in their seats yet, but they would say something about you can't enter the field of play or court of play. It's trespassing. I've actually heard that at games before.
Yeah, I've heard that too, but they don't.
But not at the end.
That's what I'm saying. That's the time you need to do it.
Exactly.
Is right at the end and repeat it multiple times.
Yeah.
Repeat it multiple times and say, listen, you want a court storm, that's fine, but guess what? You may get arrested and you may have to get, you know, bailed out. And I think that'd be a pretty big deterrent. And I don't hear, as far as I know,
no, I've never heard it at the end of it.
They should.
Yeah.
They should. There's one thing you can do right there. If you can do that, listen, Jerome Tang's been able to control a court storming after they just beat KU. Jesus Christ, excuse my language. But if Jerome Tang can do it, why the hell can't the university do it?
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Why can't Wake Forest do it?
Yeah, but it's got to be somebody that has the respect of the students too, right? Like a Jerome Tang, right? Like it's got to be somebody that has been out there that's put that work in to get
the
respect.
Well, I don't necessarily think that. I think if you have a PA announcer and you come and you say, listen, if you enter at your own peril here, but if you come on this floor, you have no protection whatsoever.
Yeah.
And you will be arrested. If you just say you will be arrested, I think that'll deter people right away.
I think that'll deter some.
Yeah, right.
I don't think
you're
going to keep a court storming from happening.
Might be, but if I can deter 500 out of 2,500 people, Kyle Filipowski might actually have a chance to leave the floor like you talked about.
Yeah. Yeah, and
so at least it improves it.
That's why I say that about Tang, though, is like he literally had them stop using a chant.
Yep.
That they picked back up just when KU was in town once here recently. But they were doing it when games with KU weren't happening. He got them to stop doing that. He's got the respect of the student body at K-State. And that's going to take you where you need to be to actually stop it, to stop a court storming from happening. I think you've got to have somebody in a position that is respected like that. It's sad that it takes that, right? And it's sad that I can make an announcement at the end of a game that says you are not protected, you will be prosecuted if you go onto the court. People are going to do it anyway. But here's another thing that is a problem with this is I see it in K-State because I watch, you know, I follow all the K-State socials. I'm closer to K-State, right? But when they do these kind of things, when they have a court storming or a field storming, they're putting videos all over their social media and basically promoting it and basically being like, oh, look at this win we had. Everybody was celebrating and having a good time. You know, the Oklahoma game's a perfect example of when I was on the field when they did it, right? And, you know, they beat Lincoln Riley. I think it was his first year there. And fans stormed the field when they beat Oklahoma that year in football. And it's like I've been in the middle of it. And there are videos and pictures and all that stuff all over K-State social media basically saying, hey, this is awesome. That doesn't help
right? No, it doesn't.
Like, and that's going to be probably going to be the case with somebody from Wake Forest is going to put this on there saying video of them storming the court, and they're going to ignore the part where a kid got an ankle sprain or whatever. But this also does not – it's not deterred by the way you react to it as universities very much either.
No.
It's like it's celebrated. Because, hey, we had this and we did. I mean, how many times do you see the videos of Michael Beasley up on top of the mm-hmm. scorers table and Jacob Pullen? Mm-hmm. Every time there's an anniversary of that, you see Jacob Pullen mm-hmm. out on the scorers table and the fans behind him on the court. And it's like those things aren't helping the cause either. And so you could maybe do something about that, too. Be like, hey, yeah, this was an experience, but it's not your experience because you're not going to have this anymore. There's no more court storming. And so those are things that you can do too to try to deter it is not celebrate it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there.
And they're celebrated by a lot of universities.
No, I agree with that. And I also seen, I forgot what university it was. I think it was SEC. It was the president of the university actually court stormed himself and said, and then they said, you're going to get a fine. He goes, it was worth every penny. Well, that helps promote it even more too, doesn't it? I mean, if your school president's like, yeah, we'll pay the fine. It's all good. It was worth it. We beat Kentucky the first time in 19 years. Like, okay, well, what happens when, you know, one of your key student athletes gets hurt? What happens if one of your key players or the other team's player gets hurt? And I like I said, I've never understood it from a legal standpoint. It's trespassing.
Absolutely.
I've never understood it. I don't know where it ever started. The very first court storm we have, maybe when Bowden was 8. I don't remember. It was a long time ago. But I enjoy watching it sometimes. It's fun and exciting. But my first thought immediately is, well, first of all, when I see people jumping over the side at a football game, I'm worried about the students getting hurt and trampled as soon as they land on side.
That football one, that was me. Like, there's girls on top of dudes' backs while they're jumping over the barrier, but the gate, right? And it's like, that girl just, like, flies forward and falls off. Yes. She's going to get trampled.
Right.
And those are the things I worried about that day when I was at the football field.
Yeah. I'm worried about not only the players on the floor, but I'm also worried about some of those young people. But I don't worry about them as much because, well, they chose to do it. But the players didn't choose to be mobbed.
No.
Kyle Filipowski didn't choose to be mobbed and just, boom, somebody run into him and come at full speed. Listen, Kyle Filipowski can go in the fetal position. He can get down and get in a fetal position, okay, like we did back in the day. Not a fetal position, but we did the tornado drill back in my—I'm so old, that's what we did. We don't have to worry about the school shooting things. We put our hands behind our head and we were down on the floor in front of our lockers, and you put your head in between your legs. Even if Kyle Filipowski does that and somebody runs as fast as they can and they run right into him, he can take a knee to the head. They can totally take him out. He can get hurt. Then he's on the ground. Then he gets trampled and stepped on. How many times people have died from these things? This is the thing that cracks me up, but it's so ironic. We act like it's no big deal. There are people who have died from these things. We have seen in soccer stadiums across the country and the world, 100,000 people. People rush this, do this, and boom, it's a stampede. People die. We've seen concerts, indoor concerts, for crying out loud, where something happens and it's a mad dash to get out. Whether there's they think they hear a gunshot or whatever the case may be, and people don't die from the gunshot. They die from being trampled to death. And yet we're sitting here, like you said, I think you make a very good point, lifting it up and creating it like it's an amazing accomplishment when your school trespasses on another institution's court or your own, and woohoo, we celebrate a win. And at what cost? Okay, financial cost to university for a fine? Yeah, they can handle that. Okay. But what happens? Like, let's sit here and ask this question. If Kyle Filipowski had a career ending injury, he's a top 10 NBA draft prospect. And he got that kid that ran into him ends his career. Now, it sounds like it's an ankle injury, so it's not as bad as it could have been. But that's all it's going to take. You have one athlete or coach that seriously gets hurt or their career is ended. Now, what are you going to do? Because now you've taken the livelihood of a student athlete that's worked his ass off to get where he is, had that all taken away because some dumbass 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old kid wants a photo op on the floor? And are we going to somehow spin it that that's Kyle Filipowski's fault that he didn't get drafted because he got hurt by a guy that mobbed the floor? I mean, where do you draw the line? Because I think you're getting to the point where that's going to be what has to happen for this to end or to be controlled in a more timely, better manner. Somebody said the other day, You allow them to storm the court, but you give everybody 30 seconds to get off the floor. Well, first of all, good luck getting them to stop for 30 seconds, okay? Yeah, that ain't going to help either. So, to me, it's either it's going to keep doing the way you're doing it, you threaten prosecution and arrest, and maybe that keeps less people from going on the floor. Like you said, there's still going to be enough people on the floor, but if you could limit it by 20-25%, that would at least make it safer. That still doesn't mean that Kyle Filipowski doesn't get run over and has a career-ending injury. That doesn't stop that. I do get that, but I don't know exactly what the solution is other than, listen, either bigger fines for the universities, then they got to hire more security, which I don't know how much is enough to do it. If you're going to start tasering people, I mean, that'd be kind of fun to watch because you are trespassing.
Yeah, I mean, you're not out of your rights if you have somebody that's got a taser.
You're
and
not.
Tase them. I mean,
you're not.
You can do it. Well, here's the thing is like.
Is that what players should do now? Is have a taser in their back shorts, have a pocket on their university athletic shorts? Kyle Filipowski, now I can't get to the sideline as a taser. Zzz, zzz, zzz. All right, now I'm going to run to the locker room.
I just feel like if you have anything happen where there is an injury, even just an injury, not a career-ending injury, just an ankle sprain. Like, if he wanted to, couldn't he not just like, hey, look at all the videos out here. Let's gather them up.
And sue.
And we're suing.
Yeah.
And you're trespassing. I was injured. You assaulted me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why can't that happen?
I would think he could sue the university as well.
But the university is going to be like, hey, we have tickets to say you can't enter, this is trespassing. Mm-hmm. They're going to be like, we can't be held liable for what somebody else does that's against our rules that we've clearly stated.
Right.
And maybe not clearly stated at the end of the game because that's not the portion of the game that you're supposed to do that probably legally. It would help, but I don't know that legally you have to make that announcement because it's on everything that you buy on a ticket. It'll say it all is. On there. University's going to be like, it's not our liability. It's not our fault. We tell them that you are trespassing and you are under prosecution. There's a possibility of prosecution if you enter our field of play or our court of play or whatever it is. So I think the university could probably cover that up on their end, which is – that's why they do that, right? Mm-hmm. That's why they have all the fine print on the tickets and whatever it is.
CYA.
And so that's why they do that for the Royals too, right? Like if somebody jumps out on the baseball field and gets tackled, I've seen it in person before. And, you know, like you said, with streakers and things like that, you know, they get prosecuted because they're the only ones that are out there. It's not a storm, right? And so it's easy to say, hey, you just entered our field and you're done. And you're going to go to jail. And so those things happen easily for one person that runs out there, right? But everybody that's doing a court storming is doing the same thing that that guy's doing. They're just not going to get caught because there's too many people to charge.
Mm-hmm. No,
that's basically what it comes down to.
Right.
And so, but I think if you're Filipowski and you do have a serious injury here, that why can't you? Hey, give me some cell phone videos. Let's gather that stuff up. Mm-hmm. And this is who it was. And I'm suing you.
Yeah. No, I think he would have his legal right to do that.
Yeah.
And so would many others if they get hurt. Caitlin Clark would have the same way of doing it, too. It's just, to me, when we get to the point where society, and maybe why I reacted as strongly as I did to your comment, is the stuff that I'm hearing and I'm reading. And it pisses me off because somehow, a guy that just was wanting to get off the floor is blamed for this.
If you're like vocally and like going in hard and actually blaming him for it.
Yeah. Directly or indirectly.
I'm not doing that.
I mean, directly.
I'm not going to do that.
Directly or indirectly, it's wrong. Because he is actually supposed to be out there. Even when the game's over.
Yeah.
He has the right to walk off the floor in a timely manner. But in his own pace, and shouldn't have to worry about run into by some student with a camera phone. That should not, and be taunted in the process as well. Which, by the way, that's a whole other part we haven't even mentioned. The taunting, the mean-spiritedness. Oh, it's so great, we stormed the court. It used to be you stormed it, and you're like, you just run around in a circle. Ah! Now it's get up in the fair's face with a phone, or flip them off, or wave your hand in front of them, and just, as it's almost like these fans want to get decked. So they somehow think they could sue the athlete, which I don't know how legally you have any grounds.
You don't.
Because you've trespassed in the first place. You wouldn't think so. But it's just, it is mind-blowing to me that we either don't have a better system in place to protect the players, or we don't have some more consequences, repercussions for these people that come onto the floor and do these things.
Yeah.
And I don't want to come across as Debbie Downer and say, well, you know, I'm trying to take away all fun from student-athletes. But at the same time, when you pay to attend the university, whether you're on scholarship or not, or no, when you attend the university, there's nothing that says you are provided free access to the arena and the floor to run out there whenever a game's
no.
There's nothing in those stipulations whatsoever. So why do you have the right to, you know, if I go, can I go ahead and just stroll into your dorm room and do whatever I want? I'm guessing I can't.
No.
Maybe I'd like to. But that would be breaking and entering, wouldn't it? Or trespassing, or they call the cops and I could get arrested if I don't leave. It is amazing how some things are accepted and other things are not. And there's a thing that is a common denominator to me that is not prevalent in a lot of these discussions, and that's called common sense. Where the hell has common sense gone in this world? because I don't think there's as much of it as we used to have. And the fact that people can blame an athlete on a floor for getting run into and possibly being hurt worse than anybody else on the floor and blame him is not common sense at all. Should court storming be banned? That's the ultimate question. John Bowden says yes.
I think it should. I don't know how you do it, but I don't see why there needs to be court storming. Like, you don't need it, so yeah, ban it.
You know, it's like, well, it takes away. I can hear student athletes, students. Well, it takes away this fun, unbelievable moment for all of us. Blah blah blah. You can still have a great, unbelievable moment in the stands too.
We need to have more teams actually do what K-State did against KU.
Yes.
Right? The players need to storm the stands.
Yeah,
players need to jump up with their students and their student body and their peers and go in there and celebrate with them.
Yeah, Jerome Tang did after the game.
And Tang does it every game they win. Mm-hmm. He goes up either the band or the student section. And he does the Wabash at the end of the
That's
game when they win. Mm-hmm. And so if they do that, then let the players do that too. Like, they're not out there going to be trying to do anything malicious. Jumping into the seats,
right?
Let them do that. Let them have fun. Let them stand on the scorer's table if they don't want to go up into the stands, or not the scorer's table over there, but the table that's over there, right by the student section.
There is some.
That's just an example at K-State, right? No matter where you're at, just celebrate with your students while they're up there.
No, I'm with.
They don't have to run out there to celebrate.
I'm with you. Although you do risk, you know, after a KU win. A player running up and have to be a KU fan, and he just decks you and like, dude, I have my seat. You trespassed into my
seat.
Yeah,
fair.
And I mean, then they can sue the player, right?
Yeah.
You're taking a chance there. I mean, I'm just saying, anything is possible nowadays.
Well, there's not anything that says the players can't go. Well, there is, actually.
There probably is.
There is in the NBA, for sure.
See the malice in the palace. Yeah. And it almost happened the other day in the NBA game, the Pelicans and the Heat. It almost got into the stands, and there's players that have been fined and suspended, including Jimmy Butler. So, you know, this just happened the other day as well. And you don't see the fans come out trying to support their team and rush the court when that happens.
No.
And why couldn't they? You got security outnumbered. You know, that's the scary part, you know. That's the scary part. But at the end of the day, luckily, Kyle Filipowski is not seriously hurt from what we understand. But if that happens at some point, I don't think it has to be a star player, but if it is a star player, if Caitlin Clark, if her career ended in that melee, I think you might not even had what you had at Wake Forest Duke. You might already had stuff in place. So is that the way to do things? Is wait till something
Absolutely
happens?
Absolutely not. But that's what we do.
That's what we do. It's reactive instead of proactive.
There are some things that you just don't know that you have to react to, right? There's some things that just there's not a precedent for, and you got to be reactive at that point. But this is something that's been going on for a long, 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 long time.
Yeah, I feel kind of torn a little bit because I hate to take away fun from students and enjoying a great moment. And at the same time, I don't agree with opposing players being stuck in the middle of something, especially rivalries make it even worse. And then being taunted, it's just not right. And that when you buy a ticket or even a free ticket, it doesn't give you the right to go on the field and do anything to anybody at all. You know, even if you have the right intentions. Well, I'm sorry, I just ran the floor. I want to give Coach Tang a hug. I love him so much. Yeah, you don't. No, you're not allowed to do that.
No.
But I guess if you get 10,000 people want to go hug Coach Tang, it's okay. Makes total sense.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.